Invicte has been managed privately since its founding in 1805, meaning that our partners have dealt with the same challenges facing all entrepreneurs. Our owner-managers are themselves entrepreneurs who, like our clients, want to build an even stronger firm to pass on to the next generation. Over more than 200 years, we have built up experience and specialist wealth management expertise that puts us in an ideal position to offer independent advice. Entrepreneurial clients feel a deep connection with our partners as they can speak with them on the same level, business owner to business owner.
Unpacking the backstory of any successful global brand, beyond the tales of business genius and anecdotes of finding a gap in the market, often the most intriguing stories are the ones about when the company was at a crossroads. Those moments when everything was in the balance, but at the last minute the funding round was completed, or the right manufacturing partner was found. From highs and lows in recounting growth, from transforming from a scrappy startup to major player in any industry, we've heard it all on this show. Well, that is perhaps before this week's program. My guest is Nicola Kilner, the co-founder and CEO of Deciem, a global sensation in the skincare market known for its tagline, the Abnormal Beauty Company. Nicola co-founded the Toronto-based company in 2013 with Brandon Truax. The pair had met a few years earlier when Nicola was working as a buyer for British pharmacy chain Boots. Brandon came from a computer science background, but was certain he could shake up the skincare market by starting a company that acted as an incubator for various brands. And so, in a nod to the Latin word for 10, the pair launched Deciem, 10 beauty brands at once, including Neod and the Chemistry brand. The company had great initial success, but it wasn't until 2016 and the introduction of Deciem's 11th brand, The Ordinary, that things really took off. The Ordinary stripped away the marketing, false claims, and ballooned prices known in the industry, selling people base ingredients to treat any skin type. Deciem shops around the world were packed, loyal customers raved about the product, and the beauty industry was really paying attention to this startup, run by its eccentric and passionate leader Brandon Truax, who oversaw everything from production to shipping at their Toronto office and laboratory. Estee Lauder was so intrigued it bought a 28% stake in the business in 2017, with Brandon saying the cosmetic giants understood his vision for the company. But then 2018. Brandon's erratic behavior became very concerning for the company, its investors, and customers when he began using the company's social media accounts to post all sorts of videos, which suggested a very real struggle with mental health issues, drug use, and accusations of financial misconduct within the company. Brandon fired some of the executives, including Nicola, and at one point shuttered all of the brand's retail shops and halted operations, with reports Estee Lauder had acted to remove him. Things were going off the rails, but Brandon's personal struggles were also very real. He was hospitalized multiple times around the world. And then, in January of this year, the worst possible outcome. Brandon was found dead in Toronto with his close friend and co-founder, Nicola Kilner, left to inform the team at Deciem. With a newborn baby and the loss of a close friend and business partner, 2019 has been a difficult year for Nicola, to say the least. She has spent this year getting the company and its culture back on track, talking about mental health issues, and also following through on Brandon's vision for the company, as Deciem's loyal following and retail footprint both continue to grow. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bache. For today's program, I had the great pleasure of sitting down with Nicola at Midori House to hear the story of Deciem.
So the plan was definitely to kind of be the rebels in the industry and really try and kind of disrupt the way things were done. We used to say there's no point us doing what everyone else is doing with a lot less resources behind us because we're only going to fail. So let's try and think differently. And I think, you know, almost probably one of the blessings of Deciem, as a startup, we didn't have much money, so we couldn't really afford anyone with experience because experience tends to come with higher salaries. So as a result of that, actually, a lot of the founding team, most people were kind of straight out of college, university, school with very little experience and definitely no beauty experience. But that actually meant we had this team of very creative thinkers who didn't have any preconceived ideas of the way that things should be done in the world of beauty. And sometimes we say, you know, when we look at what happened with The Ordinary, we kind of just took a common sense approach around, you look at the healthcare industry and, you know, if you have a headache and you want to go and buy paracetamol, you go into a pharmacy, you know, you'll spend £1, maybe £2 on paracetamol. You know the ingredient, you know the concentration of, you know, 500 milligrams, what you might be purchasing. But you know that's safe, it's effective, you trust it. And all of these ingredients exist in the world of skincare, you know, vitamin C and retinols, etc. But no one was actually treating it like the healthcare industry does, to say, look, these are the ingredients, this is what it is, this is the price point. And I think, you know, the transparency in communication, you know, when I think about the difference between when Deciem started in 2013, when The Ordinary launched, which was at the end of 2016, actually, even in those few years, the conversation was suddenly belonging a lot more to the consumer. And that's, you know, the great thing about the world of social media and online, that actually that conversation can exist there and be led by that community, as opposed to kind of just being led by brands and kind of in the more traditional marketing means. So actually, you know, The Ordinary came at a time where people were passionate about having conversations. And I think that transparency about saying to the audience, you know, this is the ingredient, this is the concentration, and actually this is the price point, because this is what that ingredient should be. And again, there's kind of an honesty that says ingredients in The Ordinary have been around for 30 years. And it's trying to, again, break down these kind of wrong ideas where paracetamol's been around forever, but it's still an incredible ingredient. And I think sometimes in beauty, and actually maybe in the world, people are forever chasing new. And actually sometimes there's just a respect for, you know, things that have been around for a long time, might have been around for a long time because they're actually also very good. But, you know, the good side of something that's been around forever is that it's a lot more cost effective. There's more people in the world making it. There's less testing involved because everyone has a kind of common acceptance of what paracetamol does, what vitamin C does. We kind of know those claims. We don't need to do the testing that we have to do for some of our other brands like Neod, which is highly, it's all about new technologies, new ways of formulating. And actually a lot of testing goes into Neod, which is one of the big expenses that kind of makes up, you know, the price points within Neod. And that's because we have to do that because there's so new technologies to the market.
If we look at the industry, it's almost incredible that it came to a point where people were paying just unbelievable amounts for skincare. But of course, for a long time, people have been paying a lot of money for their routines, and that makes sense. But we live in sort of almost this peak wellness world now, where not only are people willing to pay for things, they're also asking that brands are transparent and acting sustainably, but also saying, why would I pay 10 times what it should cost? And you've just stripped that away, I think. When you go into one of the shops or look at the online shop, it's, you're buying just bare bones ingredients. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
The other big challenge we had is there's a trying to get people to understand that price point doesn't define quality. You know, people think luxury meant high price points, when actually I think in today's world, the consumer, you know, whatever that definition of luxury is actually about authenticity and integrity and transparency. That's what defines luxury, not price point anymore. And it's actually amazing when I see, you know, the price points of The Ordinary, which starts from £4. And we have these amazing counters in the likes of Harvey Nichols and Selfridges. And again, these are retailers who predominantly would have been perceived as luxury being high price points. So to actually sit next to brands like Chanel and Tom Ford, having a lower price point but still being perceived in that area, I think is a testament to the changing in consumers' behaviour and demands, where people now do demand authenticity, integrity is kind of key qualities in the brands that they choose to purchase. And again, I think another big shift is, you know, I think in today's world, and Monocle's probably a perfect example, I think consumers really join a brand. They don't just purchase a brand. They actually choose to kind of follow that journey. And that's why I think everything you do is so important. And then the transparency is really how you build that long-time relationship.
Well, you touched on it in the marketing sense already in these massive campaigns. You guys said, we're not going to really do that. And in the direct-to-consumer way, you were doing it through social media, which is great. But also in the huge success of interest in the brand, retail also happened as well, and you guys have an incredible number of stores now in a lot of the main markets, Toronto, Vancouver, New York, the main cities in Australia and in London here. More planned, I imagine. Tell us a little bit about how that started and why that was important for the brand.
So our own Deciem store is really important because that's really where the brand lives, from the fragrance when you walk into the store to the way that each store has been designed individually, the slogan you'll see at the kind of back of the store, which is normally quite relevant to the location that that store is in. And what's nice about our own stores is, you know, the challenge we have at Deciem is the ordinary is our most amazing success. And it's also sometimes I feel a challenge of our overall brand. You know, we are Deciem, we're the abnormal beauty company, and we have many different brands within the portfolio. But when you have one brand that's kind of run away and kind of become this kind of huge community brand where it has so much love, you sometimes feel like the other brands, you know, they're like babies to us. We love all of them. And actually, it's difficult when one child's getting all the attention. So it's really nice in our own stores that actually all of the brands live there. And our team are passionate about Hyalamide, about the chemistry brand, about Neod. So it's just nice that we have our other brands, not just, I mean, The Ordinary is available there, but it's nice that we actually have a home to really make sure Deciem still has a life and that we still remain a beauty umbrella with multiple different beauty brands. And, you know, in the next couple of years, we've got plans for 4 new brands launching. So we're going to continue to really be an incubator, have a strong pipeline of innovation. So it's nice that we have that stores where we have that direct relationship with our consumers and we can continue to kind of see our new baby brands being born.
You talked at the beginning about spreading the risk by having these different brands, but if you have one that is the breadwinner, the runaway success, what then becomes the point of all the other ones if you have one that's doing so well?
Hopefully find another one. And, you know, it's, you know, the other thing I think why it's important for us to stay being an incubator and having multiple different brands. Firstly, each brand does have its own positioning and there's products in Neod that could never live in The Ordinary. And even if it's a much smaller in terms of kind of financials, our team are incredibly proud of Neod because it really is truly cutting edge technology. It really pushes things to the next level. It has this amazing approach where it's about skin health and it does things I think very differently to other skincare brands. So we definitely have such a feeling of pride for the other brands that come out of the incubator. And I think it really helps to keep the team inspired and engaged. I think, you know, we have a very creative team, just not just in the creative department, but actually I'd say most of our team members are very entrepreneurial and very creative mindsets. And I think if they were to just work on The Ordinary, they would probably get bored in honesty because, you know, the nice thing is when there's new brands coming, we're trying new concepts, there's new positioning, maybe it's targeting a new consumer. It means that we can always find a place for ideas to live and come to life, which I think is probably the magic of Deciem.
So we've talked up to 2016 when The Ordinary started, and me being from Toronto, I knew about this because of the retail shops and the great concept there, but also it was this started in Canada, grassroots brands that gained incredible traction. But then in 2018, things really went in a different direction. And I think some people were saying, I mean, I think the behavior of Brandon was maybe part of the marketing, but it also came to a point where you had to close stores at a certain point. I think you actually lost your job twice.
Yes.
Can you walk us through this incredibly difficult year?
It was, you know, with Brandon, he was a best friend and family to all of the kind of co-founding members of the team. And he was the most incredible human being I'll probably meet my entire lifetime. There was only one Brandon. He was a genius. He was creative. He had an incredible heart. He truly cared about people and he really did treat us all like family. And, you know, when you've been through kind of those startup years where you have sleepless nights because you're all in the factory working, you're doing multiple flights all over the world to try and get people to kind of fall in love and kind of believe in what you're doing, you just have this amazing bond. And it almost changed overnight. We all went away for kind of the festive holiday towards the end of 2017. And 2018 started in a horrible manner. And it's difficult when you're all watching someone you love. This isn't just a colleague, a founder, a leader. This is someone that actually we would class as family. And it was one of those situations where we were all helpless. And whenever any of us tried to help, we lost our jobs. And, you know, that's just a really hard place to be because when you're watching someone suffer, you really, you just, you want them to get better again. You love them. And I think it's a, you know, mental health is an area where I don't think we understand it at all. I think it's a huge area that we need to understand a lot more. We need to understand how we can help prevent. So actually, when the first signs start to show, are there things differently we can do then before it kind of continues to spiral out of control? And also, how do you, you know, there's people where when people are in powerful positions, it makes it even harder to help them because they're still holding the power, which is, you know, I think almost why it went on for a long time. And it was hard for the team. It was public. Everyone was kind of watching what was happening. We're all human beings who have big hearts, and we're not only trying to kind of keep a business going, which, you know, even in the background, many of us who had kind of temporary leaves from the business were still involved communicating with each other, because everyone, we all had this belief that Brendan would get better and he would always be the founder. He would come back and kind of lead us again, even, you know, when he was removed from the business. And it's just heartbreaking that it didn't end in the way that any of us wanted it to. And, you know, we did have a lot of support from the board, and actually everyone was aligned with the only thing that matters is trying to get Brendan the help he needs so that he can come back, because Decian was Brendan. Brendan was Decian. We definitely had a period of being lost with everything that was happening. And I think now, you know, the team are just committed to this is Brendan's legacy. He set us up in the most incredible way we could imagine. He built this company with us, for us. He really instilled in us behaviours that he really believes in, what's important for the brands. And it's nice that we actually have so many of the team who worked with Brendan for many years. So he really does live on in everyone. Even in our new office we just moved into in Toronto, he picked that location. He was, you know, he lives through in everything we do. So now we're really just continuing to kind of live his vision.
That's incredibly encouraging to hear, and is an incredible vision. Before we move on to 2019, which also started in the most difficult way possible, I just want to hear about what it was like to be on the outside looking in 2018. I think you're quoted as saying you didn't work at Decimi. You weren't part of 2018 unless you lost your job, which a lot of people did. But you were worried about Brendan and his mental health and what was happening, but also what was happening with the company. What was it like to be on the outside for a little while?
It was horrible, to be honest, and I don't know if I ever was on the outside, because everyone was kind of so close-knit working together to just, I mean, first of all, understand what's happening, because it's, you know, that's the difficult thing about mental health is there isn't a simple diagnosis. It's, you know, when it comes to healthcare, there's tests that say this is X, Y, and Z, and then the brain just works in such a different way. And what's difficult is obviously the, you know, the brain also stops the ability to perhaps see what that challenge might be. And it was just, we had glimmers of where, you know, the health services would get involved and kind of, you know, a sectioning would happen. And we'd think, finally, he's getting the treatment he needs. This is the moment where things are going to turn around. And that happened 5 times in different countries around the world. He never got the help he needed. And that's actually a big challenge that the world really needs to face, that we're not helping people. We as a world all watched what was happening. And, you know, there were so many tears and everyone was just distraught that we actually were just helpless watching someone that we loved behave in a way that wasn't them in kind of their healthy mindset. And actually, we couldn't see a road back. And, you know, people say to you just have to reach rock bottom. But it never went back up for us. And you know, as you mentioned, January was the ultimate rock bottom. And that's where that kind of ended. And it's just, you know, one of the things that I think with time, you know, we as a company are still healing. Because, again, this wasn't just a leader we lost. It was someone that most of us would really call family. So we've still been healing, we've been repairing, we've been rebuilding, because there was also a business in the background. And, you know, when the board stepped in to kind of take action, and again, that was partly everyone thinking maybe this is what it needs to kind of turn things around. But there was also at that point 700 employees with livelihoods, and you know, we had to protect them as well, because there was a lot of people who, again, Brendan cared about and were really relying on Decian. So yeah, it was just not a kind year, I think, for anyone involved.
You talk about the sort of camaraderie and the family-like culture. In January to start this year, Brendan is found dead, and you have to write to all the employees. did you feel like you were alone at the top? You've got to steer this ship, or what was that like? I can't even imagine.
I think, you know, for any family that kind of goes through a passing, you all bond together. And it was one of those moments where everyone just pulled together to say, actually, let's celebrate Brendan now. He had the most extraordinary life. He lived more in his 40 years than I think most people do in a whole lifetime. So actually, let's just remember all the great. Let's celebrate his life. Let's continue to kind of build the Jessian vision. And then I think we're also committed to actually, how do we do more for this world in terms of actually looking at mental health and how we can and try and help others from going through what we did.
We talked about the size of the business and the incredible popularity and growth of the brands. You took on some big investors before everything happened with Brendan. But moving forward this year, what was the focus then on trying to get the company out of a difficult year and make sure it got back on the track that you had originally set out for yourselves?
So a lot of the focus went into the infrastructure of the business because we, you know, even in the difficult year that happened, sales were still growing at a significant rate. And actually the behind the scenes, things were to some extent falling apart. So there was a lot of focus in 2019 actually really building the infrastructure. You know, Brendan created this most incredible business, which continues to grow at unbelievable rates year on year and smashes so many records, that actually it's important that we allow it to continue running in the way it is, which means actually we really need a strong production and processes in the back to really help it continue to fly. And then also putting more focus, and this is a big priority for 2020, back into being an incubator again, because, you know, the challenge when you have one brand that suddenly becomes kind of the runaway success is all the resource had to go to that brand, because that's kind of, you know, what was needed. So actually there's a lot of focus in the next year getting the incubator side back and really having that focus on innovation, new brands, new products coming to life.
I'm curious about your take on the beauty industry now. Obviously, you said on store shelves and the biggest retailers, you sit beside a lot of those big names and high-priced items, but there's still a lot to do, I imagine, on teaching people about the products they're buying and how they're created as well. So what's your focus there?
I mean, our focus internally is always going to be on innovation, because that's what keeps the world moving. And you know, innovation, whether that's in terms of new ingredients or with The Ordinary, the innovation was actually just in the positioning and the pricing and the communication. So innovation isn't just in ingredients. It can really come in kind of lots of different ways. And we'll continue to try and think about things differently. I think there's still a lot of things that I think could be done in new ways in the beauty industry. And I think it's a nice time in kind of society where people are just open for things being done in a different way. And I think, you know, we have a great relationship with our consumers, especially through social and kind of in a direct field, that actually they're kind of open to our messaging. So we're excited to kind of continue as things evolve. And again, you know, The Ordinary, if we launched it in 2013, it might not have been the right time, but 2016, I think, when it launched, was just at the right time of people actually suddenly having this, there was a lot more demand for education and knowledge. And that's a good thing about Jessian. We, you know, when people kind of ask us for a 5-year plan, it's always something we kind of screw our faces up at a little bit, because we don't know what the future holds. And, you know, maybe in another few years, there's something that we can't see at the moment that becomes a new area where we think, actually, there's a new way of doing it now, which we think is going to really resonate with consumers.
I'm just curious about you as a leader and how it's been moving through this. Obviously, a big company to front, a lot of people that rely on you. You've already talked about the livelihoods of those hundreds of employees. What's it been like for you? And are you now in a place where you can enjoy this again?
Well, I guess to just add to kind of the chaos of everything happening, I had my first baby at the end of December, December 29th. So, you know, when Brendan passed, she was 3 weeks old. And it was kind of one of those times where, if you could see the future, I wouldn't have necessarily planned the timeline of how everything kind of coincided together. But actually, I think having Mila was almost the kind of saviour to kind of really get me through it, because it's, you know, when you have a child, it just grounds you again, and it kind of gives you this sense of everyone is someone's child, and that's a love that's very important. You want to protect them. So everyone you're talking to in the world, there was someone else that has that feeling about them. And I think, you know, it's as I said, 2018 wasn't a kind year. So the one thing that I had to make sure 2019 was a very kind year to our people. And, you know, we've really spent a lot of time on supporting our people because they really did stick with us. And, you know, it wasn't easy for anyone in that year. So for anyone that showed us that loyalty, it's important that we, with gratitude back, show them love. And I think it's also how I would, you know, see myself as, you know, someone who works at Decian. But it's, I think if you were to look at leaders 20 years ago, there was a feeling that, you know, a leader of, you know, a business with a few hundred million in revenues and, you know, we're getting close to 1,000 employees now. In the past, you'd see that leader as someone who had to be, you know, the loudest voice in the room and perhaps quite kind of almost confrontational at times. And people would almost kind of fear that person. And I think it's amazing to now be at a place in society where people can actually accept kindness as the new cool and actually having a leader who's actually there for people and hugs everyone and actually just leads with kindness, I think is really what keeps that magic alive at Decian. We had our Christmas party last night, actually, here in London. In that room, there was just so much love. And I think, you know, when you create that kind of environment, I really believe people do their best when they're not in fear and actually they're just supported to kind of be allowed to grow and actually kind of show the world what they're truly capable of.
Through everything that has happened, becoming a new mother and losing Brandon at the start of 2019, were you even able to reflect on the type of leader you were or the type of leader you wanted to become?
I wouldn't necessarily put any thought into kind of the kind of leader I would be. And I think, you know, it almost just kind of evolved naturally. But I think two things that I'm very grateful for is, first of all, when I worked at Boots, I think, you know, for any kind of beginning of a career, to work at a corporate, it's probably one of the best educations you can have because you learn what corporates do really well. You learn what doesn't work in corporates. So I think that was kind of a really good education. And then obviously, you know, starting at Decian and, you know, back in 2013, there was probably 10 of us. But really learning from Brandon, who, you know, is a passionate entrepreneur, and that brings so many positives, but then it also probably has a few negatives as well. So I think, you know, being able to probably see the two extremes of how a corporation works and then how an entrepreneur works, I think has probably given me a blend of both that I think for kind of where Decian is in its journey is probably the kind of right marriage for what it needs.
Going forward into 2020, out of some trying times, how excited are you moving forward and what place is the company in now?
You know, right now the company's actually ending in an incredible place. We have a happy team, which I think is very important to us. It would have been very important to Brandon. The future's looking amazing. We have incredible partnerships with some people who really believe in our brand and the way that we do. And we have an audience who support us through everything and I think are excited to kind of see what's coming next. And, you know, we just continue to grow at an amazing rate. And I think the team are, we've got a really good balance between kind of the creative innovators to kind of keep that Decian magic alive. And then we've actually brought in some really good, more infrastructure people to make sure that however crazy our dreams are, we've got some good people that can execute it and kind of make sure that we kind of stay on track. So yeah, business is looking great. We're continuing to kind of double in revenues kind of most years. So yeah, very excited for 2020 to come.
That must be nice to be able to point to that success of this year for people that questioned the company just 12 months ago, I guess.
I know, and I think when a brand has been built with such a strong DNA, and again, you know, we had an audience that really did join us and they loved it. And, you know, the reality is we, as a society, we are becoming more aware of mental health challenges. And I think, you know, people could see it was a difficult place for all of us. And I think people could see that, you know, Decian was full of a lot of good hearts, Brandon with probably the biggest heart of all, and people could just see we were in a very difficult situation. And I think, you know, people really helped us get through that difficult stage in our company's life. And I think it's nice that they kind of helped us get through and they're supporting us for our next chapter too.
Just lastly, Nicola, I very much appreciate your time. And I'm just curious about the journey as an entrepreneur for you, obviously incredible highs and the worst lows for you, which you could not have foreseen, but has it been rewarding in the end? Are you enjoying this business journey?
It's, you know, even with everything, I'm so grateful for the day that I met Brandon. He changed my life forever. Decian is the dream. It's what if I could have kind of planned a company growing up as a young girl, then Decian would be the company that I would really want to be leading. So feel forever privileged that paths crossed in a way that meant I actually had, you know, an amazing few years of Brandon where, you know, we were inseparable for many years. So forever grateful for that time and forever grateful to be surrounded by an amazing team with an amazing audience that allowed us to continue to innovate and do exciting things.
That's all the time we have on today's program. Thank you very much to Nicola Kilner for her warmth and candor in sharing the story of Decium. The show was mixed and edited by Nora Hull. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening and goodbye.